to you.
Yeah, well, we're going to set up a time, Khana. All right. So as we said, we're going to get to, it's probably going to take us 2 weeks to finish this topic, but I wanted to discuss vegetarianism, or Cook's view on vegetarianism. This is, we're going to see how this relates to the Messianic era. But there's this essay that Cook wrote as part of a greater work of a collection of essays from Rav Cook that deal with proper morality and Jewish ethics, and this was one of those essays. I'm fairly certain that Rav Cook in his own practice only ate was a vegetarian for the during the week, and then only ate meat on Shabbos and Yontif, and that the rest of the time he was a vegetarian. We're going to see as we go through this why that was his approach and what his perspective was on the matter. Just to start, I mean, we obviously know that there's a permissibility of eating meat. We know that that is the case, right? The Torah says that as long as it meets the requirements as set forth in the Torah in Parsha Shmini as to what is considered to be a kosher animal, and that it is slaughtered properly, v'zavachta kasher tzivisicha, the pasuk says in Parsha Re'eh that it was slaughtered according to the commandments that Hashem gave Moshe Rabbeinu, and that if it is a wild animal, a chaya or an oaf, a non-domesticated animal, that its blood is covered with dirt. You go through kisui adam. So as long as it meets those qualifications, then it is permissible to eat meat. So we're going to have to understand then what Rav Cook's perspective is with regard to vegetarianism. I thought that the best way of actually doing this is that we're not going to read through every single word of his essay. It's a long essay. What I have for you tonight is the first half of it. Because I think tonight we'll probably cover just the first half, and then next week we'll come to the second half of it. Because the way that he builds on his whole thesis is just unbelievable. It is really incredible to see. And this is just a good example of the way Rav Cook thinks, that he really breaks down concepts in a way that is both understandable and very, very, very deep. We're going to, as we go through it. So he begins as follows. He says that we are living in an era of, he refers to as radical idealism. Obviously, Rav Cook didn't write this in English. This essay was edited by his student, Rav David Cohen, who is the Nazir, was the Rav Cook's star pupil. The Nazir, Rav David Cohen, was the father-in-law of Rav Gorin Zatzal, who was the chief rabbi of Tzahal, and then later of the land of Israel, and Ashkenazi, chief rabbi of Israel. But this has been translated into a number of different languages. And so we're going to go through the English translation over here, which for the most part is, except for one part, which we'll get to. For the most part, though, this is a very good translation of the essay. But he begins by talking about this concept of radical idealism, which is something that we encounter in our generation. And if this Rav Cook is writing this in the early part of the 20th century, if Cook passed away in 1935, I believe, right? So I'm writing this in the early part of the 20th century or the late part of the 19th century, probably the early part of the 20th century, he's writing this. And so if it applied then for sure it applies now. And basically, radical idealism is that we have this natural desire for moral aspiration. It's just that people don't know what to do with that natural moral desire for moral aspiration, and then therefore they become radical in their perspectives, in their philosophy. And of course, we know that to be true. Probably the best example of this in the modern time is the how do you deal with COVID, right? In that you got two sides, both trying to do what is morally correct and coming out in in some scenarios, completely extreme differences to one another, where on the one hand, you have people that are like radical anti-vax, anti-mask, anti like COVID crazy, like don't even, it's the common cold is worse than COVID, and like just totally on one end. And then on the other end, you have that I'm going to get as many vaccine, I'm going to get three doses of every vaccine that's on the market. And I'm also going to make sure that my 6 month old wears a mask from the second that they're born. And like, then you see, so you have like momish, there's, you have this radical, like extremist ideologies taking place of how to deal with an issue. Now, those stem from really the same place of both wanting to do what is morally correct, and that we're experiencing today this radicalism that's exercised social justice issues. It's the same thing that we're seeing, just these radical approaches. I spoke about this when we did our class on the halacha of the Jewish approach to abortion, where, again, it's just you're taking an issue that is cut and dry from the Torah, or not necessarily cut and dry. Okay, a little bit of some gray area, but something that has a halachic approach to it. But then you have people on two ends having two very extreme views on the matter. And again, both stemming from this point of radical idealism of this natural desire to do what is right. In particular, his example of this is animal rights. Animal rights is one of those things that has this sense of radical idealism. You have on the one hand people that mamish see no difference between animal and humans, and then on the other hand you have other people that will poach killer whales, right? Like, you have on two extremes of people that, again, doing whatever they one is thinking, well, animals are just here to serve us, and it could be to my benefit to poach killer whales. And then you have on the other extreme people that want to see the value of animals and take it to the point that there's really no difference between us, us and them. Okay, so this is what this is how he opens up his essay. Take a look in the middle of the page by the underline in the second paragraph, he says that though when you look at the Torah, the Torah will give us a much clearer understanding of how to treat these different issues. They say they have not managed, nor will they manage, with all their clever counsel, to change the character of natural justice which the Creator has implanted within each individual. Meaning that no matter what, person will always have this natural desire to do the right thing. And even though with regard to animals, the sense of justice is very much like a glow and dim of smoldering ember burned beneath a great heap of ashes, nevertheless, it's impossible to deny what is felt in every sensitive heart, that everybody sees that there is value to animals, right? And therefore, the question is just, what do you do with that sense? And he actually brings up an amazing Gemara. The Gemara has the Bava Metzia on Daf Pei Hei, this story about Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. The Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi was once punished because he was going to bring a carbon in the Beis HaMikdash. And when he's going to bring the carbon in the Beis HaMikdash, the animal became nervous. When he was it was like trying, like he knew what was about to happen. So the animal starts like getting, and Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, he says to the animal, like, no, like go, because lekach notzarta, because this is what you were created for. You were created to be, right, be killed. On that lack of sensitivity, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi was punished for, says the Gemara. He was punished for showing lack of sensitivity to the animal, and that he was only healed in his punishment. He was only healed from the illness that he was given once he showed compassion to weasels, the Gemara says, right? So on the one hand, but there is a mitzvah of karbanos, right? We know that. But on the other, Reb Yehuda Hanasi needed to show compassion to the animals. So there is definitely this tension that exists. So take a look on page 2, the top paragraph, that he says that it must be that there has to be a compassion, a care, a concern, a sensitivity for animals. He says, for it is altogether impossible to conceive that the blessed ruler of all creation, who is merciful to all creatures, praises God, imposing upon this most excellent creation an eternal decree such as this, that all human race will maintain its existence by going against its moral sensibilities through shedding blood, albeit the blood of animals. That it can't possibly be that we as humans are just so bloodthirsty that we're going to kill animals just for our own benefit. It's not possible, because we have to carry some sense of sensitivity towards the animals. The question is, how do you deal with that dichotomy? So he begins, that was just all introductory. So then now is when he begins. So it starts with Psukim in Parshas Bereishis, that the Torah tells us in Parshas Bereishis, that right at the beginning of the Torah, after God creates all of the creations, he creates man, and then he says, "Vayivarech Hosam Elohim," God gave him a bracha, "Vayomer Lahem," and he says to them, meaning to Adam and Chava, "Vayomer Lahem Elohim, Peru Revu Meluat Haaretz," you're going to populate the land, "Vikivshua Rudu B'digas Hayam," that you are going to have sovereignty over the fish in the sea, "Uba Of HaShamayim," the birds in the heaven, "V'chol Chaya HaRomezet Al Haaretz," and all of the creatures that crawl over the land, meaning you're at the top of the food chain. This is what he's saying to Adam and Chava. You are the king of all of the creations. You're the greatest of all the creations. And you have dominion over them. "Vayomer Elohim," and God says, "Hinei natati lachem." Now, this is an important line. "And now I've given to you et kol esev zorea zera." I've given you all of this vegetation, asher al pnei kol aretz, it's upon the land, "ve'es kol ha'etz asher bo pri'etz zorea zera lachem yelo ochla." And I've given you the fruit of the trees, "lachem yelo ochla," and it is for that for you to eat. Now, what did he leave out from the second pasuk? The rest of the creations, right? Which means he's saying to Adam and Chava that, what do I want you to eat? Only the vegetation. The animals, Adam has not had the right to eat. And in fact, the Gemara in Sanhedrin says, daf nun tes or something like that, that Adam and Chava did not have the right to eat animals. There was no permission for man to eat animals yet at that point in creation. When do we finally get the permission to eat animals? Is not until after the flood. After the flood, God tells Noah again the same bracha. It's interesting. It's mamish, like it's almost word for word the psukim. "Vayivarech Elohim es Noach es banav." God gives a bracha to Noah, similar to what he did to Adam and Chava. What's the bracha? "V'omer Hem l'Pru Revu." You're going to now populate the world, right? This is right. World 2.0, right? You're going to repopulate the world. "Mluas Haaretz," good. "Umarachem v'chitchem yalkol chayat Haaretz." You are going to have sovereignty over all of the animals of the earth. "V'alkol Of HaShamayim," and on all the birds of the heaven. "U'b'chol asher tirmos ha'adama, u'chol digei hayam, v'yedchem nitanim." All of the animals are by your hand. You have sovereignty over all of them. Dominion over all of them. And then he continues and he says, "Kol remes asher hu chai lachem," that all living things are going to be for you, "lachem yeh lochla." The exact same words, except now he's including the animals as well. The animals as well. "Ki yerek," just like "yerek esev natati lachem eskol," right? Just like the vegetation. So it's at this point, Rashi on this pasuk says, Hashem is referencing back to what he had left out of the pasuk to Adam and Chava. Now he's giving permission to Noach and to his offspring to eat from the animals to eat from the animals as well. Take a look at Rav Kook on page 2, section 2. There is no doubt in the mind of any enlightened thinker that the dominion spoken of in the Torah, that they shall have dominion over the fish in the sea. This is referring to Adam and Chava. Over the fish of the sea and the birds of the sky, over every living thing that moves on the earth, cannot refer to the dominion of a tyrannical ruler who treats both subjects and servants cruelly in order to satisfy his personal arbitrary desires. It is unthinkable that there should be an institution of servitude as ugly as this, stamped with an eternal seal that the world of a God who is good to all, whose compassion extends to all creatures, as it says, who built the world in loving kindness. We know that Hashem was Olam Chesed Ibaneh, that the world's foundation is that of kindness. And therefore, it can't be that when God said you're going to have dominion over all the animals, it means that do whatever you want with them. How do we know that? From keep reading the Psukim. Furthermore, the Torah already testifies that at one point, all of humanity was encouraged to raise itself to this exalted moral state of not shedding blood in order to obtain food. As our sages explained in the writings, which proves from the first human being was not allowed to eat meat. Every tree yielding its seed shall be yours for food, Adam and Chava, only the vegetation. Only after the children of Noah came, page 3, following the flood, was the eating of meat permitted, as with the green herbs I give you. And henceforth, it is possible to conceive that a highly valued moral virtue, which has already existed as part of human legacy, should not be lost forever. Regarding these and similar matters, it says, etc. Fine. So the Rav Kook is pointing out to us that it's clear in the Torah that in the Gan Eden world, that is the high, again, that's the highest form that we've ever been. We were vegetarians, meaning that we did not have to rely on shedding animal blood of killing innocent creatures in order for us to have our food. It was only in a low spiritual and moral state, right? Again, what happened right at this point in the world? The world was just destroyed because of how terrible we were, right? We weren't that much better at this point after the flood. It was just a fresh start. At this point, he's saying to Noah, okay, you can go kill the animals. Now he's going to get to why it is Hashem gave that permission at this point. It's genius the way he goes about this. It's unbelievable. But clear from the comparison of juxtaposing Adam and Chava versus Noah and his offspring is that there was a moral, high moral standard of Adam and Chava not to kill the animals. I think I would take it a step further that there really wasn't a Yetzer Hara to do so either, right? Because no Yetzer Hara even existed at that point in history. They didn't even get their Yetzer Hara until after they ate from the Yetzer Hadas. I'll also point out something else as a little bit of, you know, spoiler alert. But remember, we saw the Ramban. When Mashiach comes, what state are we going to go back to? We're going to revert back to the spiritual height of Gan Eden, which means back to, right? Yeah. Presumably, I would assume so, right?
Yeah.
I would assume so. So, which means no meat, as Jack is saying, right? Fine. So now, in order to appreciate the next part, you have to start with a comment that's made by the Chovos HaLevavos. He builds a whole, the Chovos HaLevavos, the Chovos HaLevavos by Rabbeinu Bachai Pekuda. But he writes in a couple of different places that there is this concept of basically that we know that, as we mentioned before, we have this natural desire to do the right thing, right? Whether we're a Jew that's bound by the Torah and guided by the Torah, or whether we're a non-Jew that, again, is bound by the seven Noahide laws, the laws of morality. But even people that are not privy to either of those, we have a natural desire to do the right thing. We want to do what's morally correct and just. That is innate within human beings. It doesn't mean that we don't have another side of us also, but we always try and do the right things. When it comes to our free will, we try and do the right thing. That is our, basically we'll call it our teichel. That's just simple human decency. Then there's another part, which is that we also know that there is objective morality that's outlined by the Torah, right? That the Torah gives us the standard of how to become a righteous individual. Now, if a person only relied on their seichel without and completely ignored the Torah, will they have ever reached a full moral code? Presumably not. It's possible that he could have intuited every single part of the Torah. We know our utmost did, right? But the average individual likelihood will not reach a perfect moral code by simply using their seichel. And the same is true in the opposite as well. If a person only reads the Torah, they're also not going to come to a perfect moral code because it needs to be read with seichel. Like we've said many times the Manchester Rosh Yeshiva used to say that there's an 11th of the Aseret HaDibros. The 11th is don't be a tippish, don't be a fool, right? That I have to look through the Torah with that kind of a lens of that there is that this is coming to teach me something a lot deeper than just what is being laid out for me in the do's and the don'ts and checked in the boxes of the 613. So with that introduction, says Rav Kook the following. He says that that we know that we've reached our ultimate reality when the two come in fusion together. That when I've been able to figure out through Torah study and my seichel how to be morally perfect, that is when we figured it out. And that applies to the individual and also applies to us as a nation. We as a nation have been able to use our God-given seichel and also our God-given guide of the Torah, fusing the two together to become morally perfect. Take a look at page 4, the paragraph just above section 4. It says, it is understood that we can in no way set a time for this spiritual and moral elevation. We don't know exactly when it's going to happen, that we're all going to figure this out and the two are going to come together where the spiritual and moral elevation is to the point where we have figured out how to have a perfect moral code based off of our seichel and the Torah. And it is put in the same broad category, which includes other lofty qualities, which are distinct from one another. That is to say, the category of future to come, which includes among its aspects the coming of Mashiach and the revival of the dead. We know this is the Rambam. This is what the Rambam meant, right? When the Rambam said that we're going to, when Mashiach comes, it says in Parshas Nitzavim that we're going to be Ve'etiv Chavir Me'avol Secha, we're going to live this goodness, that we're going to live in this exalted fashion, more even than what our ancestors were able to access. Says we're going to achieve this immense clarity, this perfect clarity of what's right and wrong, etc. Right? We're going to understand Hashem. Now, does that mean that overnight we just learn all of Shas and Poskim and the entire Torah and Tanakh? Right? That's not what it means. Right? Our knowledge base probably is not going to increase. That requires study. What's going to happen is that our seichel is going to be so enlightened to the point that it's as if we've seen already everything in the Torah. That's what it's going to be. And so we don't know exactly when this fusion is going to take place, but eventually it's going to get to a point where we're going to reach that kind of a spiritual height. We are not discussing here specific times and their characteristics, but the impressions laid down by the Torah in which we find progression of ideals toward realization. So this is a key line from Rav Kook now, where he's saying that what now our goal needs to be, especially in the pre-messianic era, which is what we're in right now, is that we need to be looking to how to progress ourselves to the point where we're getting closer and closer to this perfect fusion. basically, that's what he was saying in that opening introductory section of that, why we're experiencing more of this radical idealism today. Because people are kind of like anxious to seeing the morality come to fruition. Now, they're being misguided because it's not coming about through the lens of the Torah, right? And not looking to see how the Torah should guide their seichel, which is why it's radical. But it is definitely happening because we're getting closer to the Messianic era. And therefore, we need to make sure that the progression of our morality to great spiritual and moral heights and nation is happening and progressing through the lens of what the Torah lays out as proper morality. Now, if that's the case, so then we know that for Adam and Chava, they were given no permission to eat meat. And then for Noah, he was given the permission to eat meat. So there has to be some sort of progression that comes from Noah back, circling back to Adam and Chava. Now, where is that progression going to take place? And how do we know that the Torah wants us to go through that progression? This is what he's going to lay out for us now. So take a look. We're on page four. We're on page four, section four. But to appreciate section four, it needs to, we need to start with where the Torah gives us the mitzvah to eat meat. And Noah was given the right to eat meat, but how do we know that that Hashem will endorse that? Meaning to say, maybe he's just saying to Noah, like you could eat meat, right? But he was a Noahite. Who's to say that applies to Bnei Yisrael? So where the obvious place to look is the laws of Shechita. So when you look at the laws of Shechita, Torah says, this is in Parshas Re'eh. Yarchiv Hashem Elokecha es Gvulcha asher diber lecha. That when Hashem, when you're in a place that's not in the boundaries of Yerushalayim, Amarta Ocha Basar, that Hashem says that you could eat meat. Ki, why can you eat meat? Ki ta'aveh nachal echol basar, because you have a desire to eat meat. B'chol avat nafshecha tochal basar, and therefore eat however much you want. Right? Because you have this desire to eat meat, eat what you want. Because you're not always going to be in Yerushalayim where you're going to be able to eat sacrificed meat. You're not always going to be able to eat the offerings of the Karban Shlomim, and not always going to be able to eat that. And therefore you eat the meat that Hashem has given you, like I command you, and you should eat in your dwellings however much to your heart's content. So the Torah is just reading between the lines over here. The Torah is kind of putting this in a negative framework of that I'll let you eat it because you have this desire to eat it. Because you have this desire, I'll let you give into the desire. Okay, which is something generally we don't do, right? We generally try and be more pious, right? Or more calculated and thought out, right? By the way, this is part of why Rav Kook during the week didn't eat meat, because there was no mitzvah for it, right? If my true ta'avat nafshecha is to do mitzvah, then my true ta'avat nafshecha, my true desires is not to have the 24-ounce cowboy, tomahawk steak, right? That's just giving into my just
all these desires. Same word, same what? Need, desire something. You want something,
right? Yeah. Just it's just a human want, right? So But Hashem, fine though. I'm okay with it. I'm okay with it as long as you go through the proper shechita process. And you go through the proper shechita process. Now let's take a look on page 4 in paragraph 4. He writes in section 4, with the coming of the permission to eat meat after the sacralization of mitzvah by the giving of the Torah, meaning we know that in order for us to have permission to eat, it needs to have been said in the Torah, because otherwise we would have thought that it was only said to Noah. So now the Torah, which is speaking to the Jewish people, gives us permission. The Torah qualifies the permission as suggested by the words, when you say, I shall eat meat, for you have the urge to eat meat. You may eat meat whenever you wish. Meaning like when you have the desire, then I'll let you do it. There is here a wise yet hidden rebuke and restrictive exhortation, namely that as long as your inner morality does not abhor the eating of animal flesh, as you already abhor the eating of human flesh, right? Has to be comparing to something, right? I'm going to allow this because you have this desire to do this, as opposed to a desire to do something else. You don't have a desire of cannibalism. So I don't need to talk about that. I'm going to talk about the thing you do have a desire for. All right, I'll let you do it. I'll let you do it. Then, page 5, then when the time comes for the human moral condition to abhor eating the flesh of animals because of the moral loathing inherent in the act, you surely will not have the urge to eat meat. Meaning there's going to come a point where that desire isn't going to be there anymore. If that desire is not going to be there anymore, so then permission is going to go away as well. Hashem's only giving the permission because the desire is there. But once our morality has reached a point where we recognize that maybe this is incentive to the animals, and therefore we're not going to do it, we don't have even the desire to do it, so then the permission is going to go away. Now, we're not at that point yet. But nevertheless, the Torah is already hinting to this moral idealism that eventually we're going to get to by Yemos HaMashiach.
So is that time coming refer to the Mashiach?
I believe so.
Anytime prior to that. You can go ahead and eat meat.
Of course.
But when Mashiach comes, we're all going to transition to a higher plane.
Yeah.
Where you call.
But it's interesting because Rav Cook's even saying maybe even before then, if you personally have no desire for it, Now, Rav Cook, I'm assuming he himself personally had no desire for it. Then why would he on Shabbos and Yom Tov? Probably because there was a special mitzvah to do that. But when there wasn't an external mitzvah associated with eating meat, then he had no desire to do mitzvahs. That's his desire. That's all Rav Cook. Rav Cook was an angel. He was unbelievable. Actually, I highly recommend reading about Rav Cook. He was incredible. More people should read about Rav Cook. He really was one of a kind. So for him, that was his whole desire. His desire was Torah mitzvahs. He had no desire for just like for a shmorg. It wasn't his desire. His desire was mitzvahs.
So he ate on Shabbos because
that's what I'm assuming.
Basar v'dagim is the dagim or
the
basar all
dagim. And the. Yeah. Okay. Good. But we're not getting to the punchline yet. We're not getting to the punchline yet. So now
I just want to ask you the whole idea of kashrut, the laws of kashrut, make you think about this because
absolutely that's what we're going to get to next. Oh, very good point. That's exactly right. We're going to get to that now. So now, okay. So what we've set forth is that Rav Cook is laying out for us. There's certainly an ideal that's set by the Torah, that the Torah, even when it gives when it concretizes its permission, not only to Noach to eat meat, but even to us to eat meat, it's only because of our desire to do so. Without the desire, though, then the permission goes away. Adam and Chava didn't have the desire, and therefore there was no permission, right? For man in a lower moral state, that we just need to give in to some of our desires, so then we then give him permission to eat meat. If that desire goes away, so permission also would go away. There, now Rav Kook is going to point out something that is going to sound counterintuitive, so we're going to have to talk it through. But it begins with a pasuk in Parshas Shmini, toward the end of Parshas Shmini, the second half of Parshas Shmini, are all the laws of what is a kosher versus a non-kosher animal, going through the different types of animals, domesticated animals, the birds, the wild beasts, the fish, etc. And the Torah writes towards the end of the Parsha, second to last pasuk in the Parsha, it says that Zos Torah Sabehima Va'of, these are all of the guides for what is a kosher behema and oaf, different animals, v'chol nefesh achaya haromeset b'mayim, fish that swim, v'chol nefesh hasharetzes al ha'aretz, and for all the things that crawl on the land, what's kosher, no, it's not kosher. V'havdil, next pas, v'havdil ben ha'tamim ben ha'tahor ben ha'chaya ha'nopelos ben ha'chaya ha'shalot te'achel, what you can eat and what you cannot eat. What does the Torah mean when it says zos horas ha'behema? Zos Torah. Whenever the Torah uses that kind of language, this is the guide. These are the halachos. This is the Torah, this thing, and repeats that. So then you know that it's coming to teach you something, because why else would it have been laid out here if it wasn't the guide, right? The Torah already told me. So why does it need to repeat that phrase by saying, oh, these were all the halachos for this thing? Of course, these were all the halachos for this category. It must be coming to teach me something. So the Gemara in Psachim, on Daf Mempes, says that we learn from here that Zos Toras is telling me that if one wants to be able to eat meat, they need to learn the halachos of eating meat. That anyone who wants to eat it needs to engage in the study of those laws. Otherwise, you will not have the right to eat this meat. Rav Kook is now going to explain why is that the case. Why is that the case? So he writes the following. He says, section 5, our sages noted that meat was permitted as a permission on account of difficulty, right? That's what we just saw in the psukim, right? When you read between the lines, because of the ta'ava nafshecha, because of the desire, is why we were given permission. Because prohibiting the eating of meat, while more desirable, would have been untenable in practice. And said, an Am Haaretz is prohibited from eating meat, for it is said that this law, the Torah of the beasts and fowls, which is read in the Pasuk, whoever engages in the study of laws of the beasts and fowl may eat meat. That is to say, the necessity to renew one's strength for intellectual endeavors from which and through which a person is perfected. Through the study of Torah is how we perfect ourselves, which is the same strength that is at work in the ascent of the creatures as well. That strength is engaged in the study of the laws and the beasts of the fowl. When the connections among all existence are realized, then the corresponding action to be taken in regards to animals will be brought to light. Meaning to say that Hashem needs to see that a person is moving up the ladder in their moral evolution, and then becoming greater as human beings and perfecting themselves spiritually and morally. And therefore, Hashem is saying, I'm going to let you give into your desire, but I'm also expecting you to work on this by studying these laws, because through studying these laws, some person is going to become more sensitive to these topics and is going to become their seichel is going to be more guided from the Torah, as we started, right? So we opened the, we started at the beginning. The seichel is going to be more guided by the Torah. And then that what's going to happen is that eventually, because they've mastered the morality contained beyond these topics, eventually going to get to a place where that desire falls away. Right? Amazing the way the Rav Kook spun that Gemara. So now Rav Kook is going to say, okay, so then ultimately though, why did Hashem give us this permission? Why didn't he just say, all right, you have this desire, and so what, right? There's plenty of other things that we have desires about that Hashem doesn't allow, right? Hashem, right? Promiscuous relationships, right? Hashem doesn't allow that. Doesn't matter what the person's desire is, Hashem doesn't allow it. So why is this different? So take a look on page 6, section 6. He says, the permission to eat meat at the time of moral downfall. Animals, too, must pay the price of passage, even as human beings pay great many taxes on the human community's altar of compensation or sacrifice a great many human lives. But the glorious future will wipe away all tears. Indeed, after human disillusion has occurred, which is likely a consequence of humanity's moral failing, the eating of meat is to be expected. This being the case, it was already established from the point of view of the intellectual prompting, meaning the seichel that we've been talking about before, which is hidden in the depths of the Torah, that the very same permission to eat meat granted after the flood was not intended to be the actual practice of all time. For how is it possible for a lofty and enlightened moral condition, once instituted, to vanish as though it had never been, right? Adam and Chava, that was the standard, was if this is morally incorrect to eat meat of animals, and therefore you can't do it. So then the Bidyevid, just giving it, letting us give into our desires, could not be the thing that is going to last for all time. So then what is it? So right? On the contrary, he writes, by the underline on page 6, on the contrary, the divine wisdom perceived that humanity had fallen from its original moral state, and that until it has risen to its previous stature, which we said before is going to come through the study of Torah, awakening to true moral cognition, until such a blessed enlightened time, the days of Mashiach, we know that's going to be, Rambam told us that, the high level of morality inheriting the recognition of the rights of animals is not expected of general humanity. Meaning God is saying, I can't expect you to see that as morally correct in the low state that we're in, as opposed to our rivals, as opposed to promiscuous relationships, where even when somebody has the desire, they know what they're doing is wrong. They know what they're doing is wrong. With animals, that's not necessarily the case. Not necessarily the case, right? A person's hungry and they eat chicken. I don't think that the average person that eats schnitzel is thinking while they're eating, I know this is not the right thing to do. Right, and then, right. It's not the way that most
the average person who's promiscuous knows.
Yes, wrong. Absolutely.
Okay.
Without question.
The biggest people say that.
Okay, because they've come to this realization.
Sure.
They've come to this realization, but again, the permission is still there. The permission hasn't gone away until we've all come to that level of moral awareness. So then. Now, the goal of this discussion is not that we all leave as vegetarians. Just put that out there.
Mm-hmm.
Me personally, I have fellatio waiting for me at home that I plan on having after this class.
You're going to a real meeting.
That's right.
All right.
So Jack has reached that level.
Jack's a tzaddik. Jack's a tzaddik. But
I'm not.
but now, so one second, Seymour. Again, that's not the goal of this discussion. What I think even Rav Kook's goal of this discussion was not to turn people into vegetarians. It's to get people to think more about the things that they do, right? About the mitzvot that we're given and that how that's supposed to play into our moral. We're going to get more into that in just a minute. Yeah, Sin.
What is the reason when they cut shrewd meat, they cut all the fat?
Oh, we're going to get to that also.
Okay.
He's going to get to that. Okay. Yes, he's going to get to that. Right? So Shem just couldn't expect it of us because it's not natural within our seichel morality to get to realize that it's something that is negative to do, as opposed to, like, let's say something like illicit relationships. Okay, let's continue to the next paragraph. And just as is the case with whoever hastily professes a level of piety so unsuitable that it only brings confusion to that person's thinking and way of life, so it is with humanity in general, in that it has fallen to the lowest level of moral decline, to the extent of the power which one human being exercises over another has become determinable, to the point where the basest kind of personal moral decline occurs. Humanity is abominable and filthy, drinking iniquity like water. How ludicrous it would be if humanity, as long as its impurities are within it, would hypocritically turn to a far-fetched way of righteousness. I love this line, by the way. I love this line, where it would have been so hypocritical for us. Isn't this line amazing? It would have been hypocritical to just say, like, oh, right, I'm not gonna touch the meat. When at the same time, we're still killing each other, right? I'm not gonna eat meat, but I'm gonna say Lashon Hara, and I'm gonna spread rumors, and I'm going to cheat, and I'm going to not pay my taxes, and I'm going to, right? I'm gonna do all these other things against people, but animals,
right?
Animals, right? So that's why he's saying, like, one step at a time, one step at a time. The other things that we desire, right? Nobody desires to pay taxes, right? All right, it doesn't matter, right? We have to pay them. We have to pay them. Hashem doesn't say, oh, you desired, therefore I'm going to let you have it. Hashem is saying, for this, listen, you have other things I need you to worry about first, taking care of other humans. Then you'll take care of the animals. Showing yourself to be righteous only with regard to animals. If we were so nice to animals, as of all accounts between human beings created in the divine image, this is my favorite part of the entire essay. Created in the divine image had been settled, which I just will point out. Rav Kook was not a hypocrite. Rav Kook, in the fact that he treated animals in the kind and gentle manner that he did by being a vegetarian, unless there were mitzvahs that precluded him from doing so, means he did settle all human accounts of righteousness and doing the right thing between people. He never treated Buddy in no way. And therefore, he was able to take the next step in how to treat animals as well. You follow me? As if everything had already been set aright, and the rule of evil and falsehood had been banished, as if hatred between peoples, natural rivalries, racial animosity, and family strife, which causes so many moral casualties and spills so much blood, as if all these had already disappeared from the earth, and the only way left in which to elevate human piety was then the establishment of a moral foundation in regard to animals, right? That's ridiculous. Of course that's not the case. And therefore, we can't say that. So I said, the goal of this discussion is go home and be a vegetarian. Not at all. The goal of this discussion is go home and think more about how it is that I'm treating another person. Right? How it is that I was once listening to a talk from Rabbi Kiva Tatz. It was unrelated to this, but it came up tangentially, this discussion about vegetarianism. And he said that he was once on a plane, and the steward and he was sitting next to somebody. The person was not Jewish. I don't know how they got into I remember how they got into a discussion, because the person he was sitting next to, when they were passing out the meals on the plane, said to the stewardess, rude way, when she was given her wrong food, she was given the regular meal, just the stewardess, can you please take this back? I ordered a vegetarian option. And And Rabbi Tatz, who got his kosher meal, said to her, you got the vegetarian. Are you kosher? Are you Jewish? By any chance? Right? They do like Jekirov or something, right? Like, just like, you know, assuming she ordered vegetarian, like maybe she's Jewish or. And she said, no, I'm not Jewish. But it's the right thing to do to eat vegetarian. And again, she's like one of these. She, you know, someone needs to set her straight. And he said, oh, really? I'm curious. Why are you a vegetarian? And she said, because how could I eat another animal? Right? Meaning I'm an animal. How could I eat another animal? And Rabbi Tatz responds to her and says, yeah, that's interesting because other animals eat other animals. we have to, and that's similar to the point Rav Kook is making. It's like, let's first start with being nice to the stewardess, right? That's step one. Step two is, okay, then we're going to start thinking about how we can extend that morality outside of that, right? Therefore, he writes on page 7, therefore, oh my gosh, when did it become 8:30? Therefore, it is not a fitting standard for humanity as therefore is not a fitting standard for humanity in general as long as humanity remains in its state of moral baseness, except insofar as it does not overtax the capacity which it is possible for the force of human morality in its weakened state to sustain. This part's very cool. Let's read this. Let's read the rest until section 7, and then we'll pick up next week. There is no doubt this probably would take us three sessions to go through. There is no doubt that if the prohibition of killing animals was made as a religious and moral pronouncement issuing from the untainted sensibility of divine justice, whose nature is to radiate out to all creatures and to instill the recognition of the holiness of God's gifts, suffused all living beings and all humanity. If this prohibition were in force of not eating animals, while at the same time the general moral condition were still impaired, like what would be the result if Hashem said, no, they're both not right? Right? I know that one's more important than the other, but they're both not right. So you can't do either. And the spirit of impurity and anaya passed from the world, there's no doubt, and this also, it's so genius. There's no doubt that this circumstance would result in many impediments to spiritual progress. When the animal-like craving to eat meat would become overpowering, it would then make no distinction between the flesh of human beings and the flesh of animals. Meaning, the desire hadn't gone away. And therefore, if Hashem said, no eating animals, but that desire was still there, then it would result in us not seeing there a difference between humans and animals. And then the moral condition would just get worse, not better. This, again, is just an amazing point that Rav Kook is making, of that it has to be a progression. It can't be that it's just all or nothing, because all or nothing is going to result in nothing. It needs to be a progression, and that's where the seichel needs to be guided by the Torah. That's what he continues by the underline, and the killing and sacrificing of human beings in order to eat their flesh would become a widespread phenomenon.
Okay, I like this. So
yeah,
we eat meat so we don't eat each other.
That's right.
Yeah, right.
That's what he seems to be saying. Yeah,
that's like a lesson
okay. You're right. Kind of like, so let's stop. Let's stop here for now. We'll we have to pick up specifically. He's going to transition now is going to be related to Seymour's question about the prohibition against eating fat, the mitzvah of kitui adam, of covering the blood, the mitzvah of shechita, like the mitzvah related to how we eat animals, we're going to see is so directly related to the fact that Hashem is just trying to teach us how to grow from this desire, where we know what the ideal is. The ideal is getting to a point where we've fused our inner human morality with the guidance of the Torah to the point that we know we shouldn't be kind, that we are supposed to be kind to animals. Not at that point yet, which is why Hashem gave permission to Noah and then doubled down on that with a mitzvah to the Jewish people. But when he gave the mitzvah to us, he said, because you have this desire, I'm going to let you have the meat. However, look in Parsha Shmini, I need you to learn them. Don't just eat. I'm not going to let you eat unless you also are promising me that you're going to be learning and growing from this experience. And then through that process, you'll go through a progression of getting to a point that you won't need to eat the meat. You won't have that desire anymore because you're going to be more morally in line with what is true. However, if you just went to the extreme right away, so then you're going to, you're not going to have fixed the more important things. And the way we treat other people first, you need to go through that progression properly. And that's where he's going to get to how the halakhos related to how we eat help actually guide this process directly. And that's a really, really cool part of the essay.
And well, the structure of kosher, where you have the lower form of life.
Up
through the fish.
Exactly. So that's where we're going to get to all that. We're going to get to all that point. Yeah. So these are, feel free to take these and, we'll bring the, but if you can, if you take them, bring them back next week. You're going to take it. Okay. And then just bring, no. Feel free to, again, cause I, everything we're doing, I'm adding in I don't know if you noticed, I'm adding in very, very little of my own because this is gold. This is unbelievable. There's not much more for me to add than what's here because I want us also to understand the way that Rav Kook thinks as well. It's a good case study in the way Rav Kook thinks. So God willing, next week we'll continue where we left off. Okay, good. All right, Shkoch, guys.
Thank you. That was great.
Shkoch, Hannah. Yeah.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sure. All right. Good night, everyone.
Good night.